Embrace the power.
Who breaks the power of sin and darkness? Whose love is mighty and so much stronger? The King of glory, the King above all kings. Who shakes the whole earth with holy thunder? Who leaves us breathless in awe and wonder? The King of glory, the King above all kings. This is amazing grace. This is unfailing love. That you would take my place. That you would bear my cross. You would lay down your life. That I would be set free. Whoa, Jesus, I sing for all that you've done for me.
Who brings our chaos?
Who brings our chaos back into order? Who makes the orphan a son and daughter? The King of glory, the King of glory. Who rules the nations with truth and justice? Shines like the sun in all of its brilliance. The King of glory, the King above all kings. This is amazing grace. This is unfailing love. That you would take my place. That you would bear my cross. You lay down your life, that I would be set free. Oh, Jesus, I sing for all that you've done for me.
Worthy is the Lamb.
Worthy is the Lamb who was slain. Worthy is the King who conquered the grave. Worthy is the Lamb who was slain. Worthy is the King who conquered the grave. Worthy is the Lamb who was slain. Worthy is the King who conquered the grave. Worthy is the Lamb who was slain. Worthy, worthy. Amazing grace. This is unfailing love. You would take my place. That you would bear my cross. You would lay down your life. That I would be set free. Whoa. Jesus, I sing for all that you've done for me. Whoa, Jesus, I sing for all that you've done for me.
You may be seated. This morning I have the opportunity to introduce someone who most of you know or know of. As the men's basketball coach, Kirby Dean has been around here for 15 seasons. He has the honor of being the all-time winningest coach. He's had 6 of the 7 most successful seasons in school history, and again, made it to the ODAC semifinals, nearly upsetting Emory and Henry, who won the tournament. Kirby enjoyed his 200th win in the first game of the ODAC tournament, and is now successfully changing the and is known for successfully changing the culture of EMU's men's basketball program. Even as Kirby is leaning into his new role as Director of Parks and Recreation for Rockingham County, he gladly accepted this invitation to speak, and I'm thankful that he did. See if I can make it through Kirby without crying. Because you see, even though Kirby is an awesome basketball coach, he's been a companion of faith. He asks hard questions, challenges the status quo, and adamantly seeks to make Jesus central in his life and mission. And I know that he wants others to also know the hope and joy he's found on his walk of faith. I know what Kirby's about, and that's following Jesus. He'd be the first to admit that this journey hasn't always been the easiest, and he hasn't personally always been successful, as successful as he'd like. But his faith is genuine, and I invite you to listen to him today as he speaks what God has laid on his heart and shares with us this morning. Please join me in welcoming Kirby.
Quick disclaimer that my guys will know what I'm talking about. I put this chair up here because there are times during the basketball season when my sinus issues get the best of me, and sinus issues lead to inner ear issues, which lead to insane dizziness. I sometimes had a chair that sat right there on the court during practice that had rollers on it, and I would sit in the chair on my dizzy days, and when we were going full court, I would zoom with my feet and roll up and down the sideline as the kids were practicing so that I could keep track of what was going on and still move without falling out. So I won't go to the chair unless I absolutely have to. First slide is a picture from this past weekend, and the first thing I wanted to do was I wanted to thank my this year's team for the experience that we just had down in Salem. My wife and I decided that it was the best weekend that we had during my career as the coach at Easter Mennonite, including games in the Elite Eight and numerous runs into the semifinals of the ODAC tournament. It was just a special time, and our kids really came together, and the look on my face right there says it all. It's just one of the best moments of my entire career. Last year, a young lady came to my office and she said, I'm writing a piece and it's on whether conservatives are in the minority on our campus now and if they feel comfortable because of that. And the interesting thing I said to her, I said, why are you choosing me? And she said, well, the word is you're the most conservative guy on campus. And I want to just clarify a couple things as I go out the door regarding that statement, all right? I was raised old school Nazarene, and I guess people could call me a Bible thumper or whatever they want to call me. They could say those things, and I would own them, and I would be comfortable with that because I'm comfortable with how I've been raised and the belief system that I have. But I think it's important that people understand that if somebody interpreted theology or interpreted Scripture different from me, from the way I interpret it, that would never influence how I feel about that person, how I treat that person, or my ability to love that person. And I'm going to use one example. If I started listening to people that I feel really close to on campus, obviously the people I work with in the athletic department, financial aid is like second family to me, all right, for obvious reasons, but it goes way beyond that, all right? There's just good people up there. The guys and the ladies in the physical plant, they're some of my favorites. They're some of the people that I feel closest to. Marcy Engel. I mean, I don't have time to list the names, but there's so many people that have influenced me here that I wouldn't even know where to go with that. But there's one person, Deanna Durham. And Deanna and I feel as close to Deanna as probably anybody on the campus. And I'm pretty sure that our theology and our interpretation of Scripture is very different in some areas. And I'm also pretty sure that we love each other. I know I love her, and I think if you gave her truth serum, she'd admit that she loves me. And it's in a purely platonic, pure kind of way, because her husband, Byron, he seems like one of those quiet, small guys, but I have a feeling he's one of those guys that might whip somebody if he got upset, especially if it's somebody talking about loving his wife. So it's really pure. But I just, on the way out the door, I want to be real clear on that, that where I stand as an old school Nazarene does not influence my ability to love or have a relationship with anybody who sees things differently. And that's one of the things that I've appreciated about Eastern Mennonite as much as anything during my time here, is that I could be who I was and other people could be who they were, and we could still love each other. And to me, that's central to where we're trying to go in a much bigger picture than just Eastern Mennonite University. Two other things I want to say before I get into the main crux of what I'm going to talk about. I made a statement about 12 years ago. My statement was this. I probably wouldn't remember it except for the fact that my pastor has repeated it from the pulpit numerous times over the last few years. I said that I would be willing to go 0-25 if I knew every guy on my team would choose Christ and that their eternal security would be taken care of, that they were going to live their life, trust in Jesus Christ with their life. And if they do that, I'd be willing to go 0-25. I hope that I stayed with that. I hope that I didn't veer from that. Thankfully, we didn't go 0-25. The worst season we ever had was my very first year 15 years ago. We were 6-19. It never got worse than that, thank goodness. But I hope that what I did here and the way I represented the program was in that vein. And along that, I want to move on to the next thing. My Mount Rushmore of EMU basketball. This is what I really want to talk about. I want to share the four kids over my 15 years that had the most influence on our program, had the most influence on me. And a disclaimer I want to say to my kids now, it's kind of like the Hall of Fame in Major League Baseball and the NBA. You have to be out for 5 years to qualify for consideration for the Mount Rushmore, all right? So none of my guys now can be upset about not being chosen for this, all right? And I'll move quickly because I know I don't have tons of time. The first guy was my second year, a guy named Dustin Gallion. He is the men's basketball coach at Heston College. He's a motivational speaker. He speaks to thousands of people every year. And Dustin came to me. He was a JUCO kid. And I don't like recruiting JUCO kids necessarily, but we were in a bad spot early in my career. We had to take who we could get to get off the floor, so to speak. The pressure of taking a JUCO kid is they only have 2 years. So they come to play. They don't come to sit for a year or two and learn the program. They come to play from day one. So I was a little nervous about that because right away when I saw Dustin, my first thought was, he may not play a lot, to be honest with you. I wasn't sure he was good enough to help us. But he came into my office about 2 weeks into practice, and he said, Coach, I need to meet with you. I just want to clarify a couple things. He said, I just want you to know that if I play 35 minutes a game, it'll be the hardest 35 minutes you've ever seen in your life. If I play 20, it'll be the hardest 20 you've ever seen. If I play 5, it'll be the hardest 5 you've ever seen. If I play 1, you'll never see somebody play harder for 1 minute than I will. And if I don't play at all, you'll never see a guy who will support his teammates more than I will. And I'm telling you now, he lived that as much as any kid I ever had. Now, the good news for him is he was better than I thought, and his leadership skills were so crucial to what we were trying to build that he ended up playing about 25 minutes a game, which was a great thing for him, but it was never about him. And I want to share with you, you probably can't see that. I'll read just a portion of it. I blacked out the parts that were too personal between he and I for other people to hear. It was nothing bad. It's all good. But I don't know if I could have everybody see that. It says, Coach Dean, he wrote this at 1:37 a.m. on February the 19th, 2006, which is the night after we were eliminated from the tournament for his final game. He said, Coach, I've cherished multiple things during my time at EMU, but none more than our time together. Tonight, I feel like I've lost a friend that has been my greatest enjoyment since second grade. Funny how 90 feet of hardwood and 2 10-foot rims can bring such joy to one's life. What ecstasy it has been to wear that royal blue jersey, to think that for 40 minutes you get to represent a team, a community, and an institution that is far greater than yourself while fulfilling a dream. Although an ODAC title eluded me, I have no regrets because I have nothing left. Not a bad way to live this vacation here on earth, huh? I can't make you any promises, but I'll give you every opportunity. Those were your words to me 2 years ago. Thanks for the opportunity. Thanks for allowing me to live out a dream. Thanks for being a part of that dream. I'm not sure how many players can look back and say they loved all of it, the games, the practices, the coaches, the teammates, and the list goes on. Thank you for providing that experience. I believed in you because I know what you believed in. I want EMU basketball to win more games, several titles, but that is not my dream. Rather, my dream is that you will continue to lead in such a way that young men like myself will realize the ultimate goal, and that is a lifetime in heaven. More than ever, I understand that the game, like all other earthly things, will pass by. But what joy, what extreme unmatched joy in knowing that if you accept him to be your Lord and Savior, that he will never pass you by. Thanks for believing in me and helping me to believe even more in him with great passion and desire, Dustin Galyon. Mount Rushmore. Second guy, Jared Lyons, present-day coach at Washington Adventist, played for me back in 2007. He was 2004 to 2008. The thing about Jared that stands out to me is he was a seven-day Adventist. When I recruited him, his first conversation to me was, "Coach, I'll come play for you, but you have to understand, I can't play from sundown on Friday until sundown on Saturday." And immediately I knew that was going to be an issue because we played a lot of Saturday afternoon games. So I wasn't even sure I wanted to recruit him, but he was so good and shot the ball so well that I had to take him. So I took him, and I'll be honest with you, in the back of my mind, I thought, no way he's sticking with that. When he gets into it and he starts playing a lot, there's no way he's not going to play on Saturday afternoon when we play a big-time conference game and the stands are packed. He's going to play. 4 years later, I found out he wasn't going to play on Saturday in the afternoons. He was going to stick to it. When we went on away trips on Friday to play a Saturday-Sunday tournament, he would literally, during our game on Saturday afternoon, stay on the bus and pray and then play on Sunday after his Sabbath was over. All right? Jared Lyons, special guy. This is the email that he sent to me after he found out that I was leaving. "Coach, I know that was the hardest decision you ever had to make. I respect you for it, as I've seen firsthand the sacrifices you've made. I'll never forget you and Gina coming to watch me and taking a chance on me to be a part of establishing a culture. Many blessings to you. And as always, Coach, and still much more left in this late push." Austin Twine played on my Elite 8 team, was my starting point guard. I joke with Austin, he cost me a national title because his senior year he tore his ACL with about 2 weeks to go in the season. And up until he tore his ACL, we were clearly the best team in the country. I believe we'd have hung a banner that said national title rather than Elite 8 had he stayed healthy. Austin, at the end of his freshman year, we won 9 games his freshman year, second worst season I had as a coach here. He had several scholarship offers to go play option quarterback for several Division II schools down in North Carolina. I knew this because I intercepted a couple emails where coaches were talking to him about it. Who wouldn't have left for a full ride? Who wouldn't have left a team that had won 9 games? Who wouldn't have walked away from this place and gone and done that? I don't know, but Austin didn't. He stayed, and had he not stayed, we would have never done what we did in 2010. He was probably as crucial as any player in that team that led us to the Elite 8, Austin Twine. This is what he sent me after he found out. "Just seen the post on Facebook. Proud to say I could spend 4 years as a player for you. Thank you for the memories and the bond that you created. I try to install that into my AAU team," which is called the Running Royals, by the way. "Again, thank you and congratulations on the new job, but also on 15 years of changing a program, Coach." My response was, "I love you, Austin Twine, and I loved your father as well." He had just lost his father about 3 weeks before this to cancer. "I love you too, Coach. You were like a second dad, and you welcomed us all into your family. Austin Twine." Last one, Eli Crawford. Eli was the best player in the state of Virginia as a high school senior in basketball. He was also the best player in the state of Virginia in football. He was probably the best athlete in the state of Virginia. 2 years later, after going JUCO for 2 years, he ended up visiting Eastern Mennonite with several Division I schools talking to him. After his visit, he decided, "This is where I want to be." Don't ask me why he would decide that with Division I's recruiting him, but that's what he decided. Here was the issue. He came into the team that had just won 15 games in 2009 and was about to be elite in 2010, and we returned all 5 starters. We had started 4 sophomores and a junior that previous year, Austin Twine being the junior. We knew we had an issue because we had 6 guys that should start on a team that should be great. I worried about it. I thought about it. I considered it. I didn't really know exactly what I was going to do. Eli came into my office about a week into practice and said, "I need to talk to you." I said, "Come on in." He said, "How you feeling, Coach?" I said, "I'm feeling good." He said, "You excited about the season?" I said, "I'm excited." He said, "Are you nervous about anything?" I said, "Not really." He said, "I think you're probably nervous about one thing." I said, "What's that?" He said, "You got 6 guys here who probably most people think should start, and you can only start 5 unless we start cheating." And I said, "You're right." He said, "Well, let me just tell you, you don't have a problem." He said, "I came here to win. I came here to be a part of a family. That's why I chose this place. And I don't care what the accolades say, who I am or who I have been or who I could be. I'm going to come off the bench this first year so that Austin Twine can start." That moment was the single biggest factor in us finishing 4th in the country, was a kid who showed that kind of unselfishness and that kind of love. This is the text he sent me last week after we won in the ODAC tournament. I'll just go to the very bottom. "Proud of you guys. proud of your guys. Way to fight back and get the dub. Dub meaning win, all right? Love you, coach. I mean it, all right? Now, the common denominator in all four of those guys was a selfless attitude, a willing to put others in front of themselves. And there's also one other thing that all four of these guys had in common that I think sets them apart and allowed them to be the human beings that they were and the players that they were and represent our program the way they did. Probably the most selfless act in the history of the world, without question, was Jesus Christ. All four of those guys would tell you that he's the centerpiece of their life. Are they perfect? No. Are they still in process? Absolutely, very much like myself. But they all had Jesus as the center point of what they were trying to get done with their life, and that's what allowed them to be the human beings that they were and have the influence on their program, and that's why none of those four show up in any of our leading statistical categories. But they are the Mount Rushmore of EMU basketball over the last 15 years because of the influence they had on the program, the influence they had on others, and the influence they had on me. Last thing, and then I'm done. All right. I want to share one last story about somebody who inspired me, my grandmother. All right. My grandmother passed away about 2 years ago. I was asked to speak at her funeral. And when I was going to speak at her funeral, I kept thinking that I wanted to end with a knockout punch, something that would give people hope, because my grandmother was, now I'm Nazarene, my grandmother was hardcore Mennonite. She was a member at Ridgeway Mennonite since the 1950s. All right, so she's as old school as it gets on that side of it. So she knew what was up. But they wanted me to speak, and I wanted a knockout punch. And my knockout punch was going to be a book that I had, but I couldn't find it because we had moved. So I went home one day at 2 o'clock, and I was going to find this book. It's called The Applause of Heaven, because I knew at the end of the book of The Applause of Heaven, it talks about saints making that transition from this side of eternity to that side, and it describes them walking into an arena and being cheered on by the saints who have gone before, and there are people that have lined the stands that are cheering for them as they come into heaven, and I felt like that's what my grandmother had just experienced, and I wanted to share that with the people, maybe the people who didn't know that's what she had just experienced. I wanted them to know this is what my grandmother just went through. She just made that transition, and she walked in to a cloud of witnesses, and they had a celebration like you wouldn't believe upon her arrival into heaven. Well, when I was looking, I couldn't find the book. I spent 2 hours looking. Finally, in the bottom of a box, I saw a book that I thought was it. I pulled it out. Wasn't it. It was called When God Whispers Your Name, which was the same author, but not the same book I was looking for. When I opened the front cover, don't even know why I opened the front cover because it wasn't the book I was looking for. This is what I saw. December 25th, 1992, Merry Christmas, to Kirby, from Grandma Dean, with love. I read that. I had no recollection of my grandmother giving me that book. I had never opened that book until that moment, to my knowledge. I let the book fall open to the middle. I wouldn't make this up for effect, I promise. All right, this is exactly what happened in my house a little over 2 years ago. When I opened the book, the flyleaf, it fell open to that page, and my eyes were immediately drawn to this part of this paragraph in the book. And I read this to you, and this is my parting shot to all EMU folks. This is what I believe. And this is what I want to say to you as I walk out the door. And you'll never convince me that this wasn't what my grandma was saying to me as she walked out the door. There is more to your life than you ever thought. There is more to your story than what you have read. There is more to your song than what you have sung. A good author saves the best for last. A great composer keeps his finest for the finish. And God, the author of life and composer of hope, has done the same for you. The best is yet to be, and so I urge you, don't give up. And so I plead, finish the journey. So I exhort, be there. Be there when God whispers your name. God bless you guys, and thank you so much.
Answer me from where the thunder hides.
can I run? It's hard, I'm tethered to every step I could lie with you. Like a tidal wave crashing over me, rushing in to meet me here. Your love is fierce, like a hurricane that I can't escape, tearing through the atmosphere. Your love is fierce. Can I feel the only thing I found? Still don't hold back, you let me send your suit. Every turn I come face to face with you. Like a tidal wave crashing over me, rushing in to meet me here. Your love is fierce, like a hurricane.
Dismissed.